Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path. Ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Today, I have Scott Imbringham. Scott, it is a pleasure to connect with you again and finish the rest of your story, because the last time we talked, you were just like steadily on my mind. I was just like, wow, like this guy is an entrepreneur, a husband, a father, had everything, lost it all, gave himself to God and regained everything back, plus more, in a way that I would have never imagined, ever. I was like, what? Like, that stuff happened? So I'm gonna just go ahead and let you just rip at it again, man. This is a very inspirational story for people who feel like life may be over or doubtful about their relationship or their love life or their family. Because I feel like you probably have the rarest case that I probably have ever heard. I've heard a lot of stories.
Wow. Know? And I was listening to your podcast, so that's saying a lot.
Yeah. That's yeah, amazing. Man. Yeah, because you'll hear some stuff on my podcast. Like, ooh, we I know. Oh Lord. Yeah. So yeah, man. So Scott, I know you're from LA. Went to USC. Now you're living in OC, which is filled with everybody that graduated from USC. It's like OC is the place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. It. That's
yeah. So it. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Wow. Well, you touched on a couple of things. It wasn't too long ago. I found myself in front of about 1,000 of my agency peers. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, mm-hmm. and we just swept a couple of awards. And we beat some really big agencies. My company just hit 10, 11, 12 million. We're on our way to 15 million. And I thought life was great. Mm-hmm. And they called me the $1 billion man when I stepped on stage, because we helped one car company sell $1 billion worth of cars and trucks on Facebook alone. And then just a week and a half later, I'm back in my office. I'm returning to the office feeling like a conquering hero. And then two bombs dropped. One was my wife filed for divorce. And that was devastating. Mm-hmm. And then two of my largest clients, the agencies, the ad agencies that we worked with, had just lost their business. And they'd sent me an email saying, essentially, I'd lost mine. And what made it worse is I'd taken on a big line of credit, about $1 million line of credit, was into it for about $500,000 sitting on it when they told me that it was likely I wasn't going to get paid. And so my stomach dropped and I realized I was in real big trouble, because not only did I not have any accounts receivables, I was sitting on the debt and my life was just imploding. And then just a few short weeks later after that, after trying to figure out a way around it, under through it with my attorney and my accountant, fighting off just all these feelings about my family was had come apart. And then my business was coming apart. I thought, well, at least I'll have my business. Bless you.
Thank you.
At least I'll have my business. And then I didn't have that. And then I shut that down. And so I found myself flat on my back. The business had gotten shut down. My marriage had fallen apart and wiped out financially. I mean, just wiped out financially, leaving the office with just my iPhone, because my attorney was there and he says to me, hey, listen, I got some bad news for you. Like, I hadn't had enough bad news. And he said, we're liquidating all your shit. It's all gone. And so everything's considered an asset of the business. Now my kids were there. My kids were tiny. Kids are little kids, like 6 and 4. And he says, so you can't leave anything. And I'm already just full meltdown stage, barely holding it together. I'm in my office and my daughter comes to me and she says, "Daddy, I heard that man say that we couldn't take anything. Can I take my crayons?" Now, as a father, I mean, it just ripped my fucking heart out. I was so sad and I was so destroyed. And I told my daughter, "Yeah, you can take your crayons." He didn't mean that. And I have a picture. That's the last picture on Flashpoint Communications. If you go to Facebook, one of the very last pictures was a picture of my daughter leaving the office as I was shutting it down. And she's carrying a little grocery bag with her crayons in. And that was the beginning, the end of 20 years of hard work, the end of my marriage, the end of life as I knew it, a father, a successful entrepreneur, multiple homes, feeling my identity tied up with that. And that was the end of that entire era. And it was the start of a great unknown for me. How was I going to get around this? How was I going to get through this? How was I going to get out from underneath the debt? How was I going to rebuild my life? And I was facing all those questions that an entrepreneur prays that they're never going to face, especially at 50. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of a brand new journey for me.
Wow. And so just to give people a little bit of context, like, you were making millions upon millions of dollars as a marketer, right?
Yeah, I was doing, I'm embarrassed to say, I said this to a friend of mine. She said, she goes, "So you're a millionaire, right?" And I looked at her and this is how full of myself I was. I said, "No, I'm not a millionaire. I'm a multimillionaire." And I felt this pride because I started the company in my apartment in La Habra, California, a little single one bedroom apartment with my laptop. And I was really proud of what I had accomplished. And I think some kinds of pride are really good. Pride in a certain, pride in who you are and your character and maybe some of the things you've accomplished. Or I think there's good pride and then there's foolish pride.
Right.
And that was more arrogance than it was a pride. And I was very prideful. And I think it was the pride before the fall. So I gave that kind of glib answer about now I'm a multimillionaire. And it wasn't too long after that when I wasn't a multimillionaire. I was making great money. I mean, multiple homes, all the trips. When we'd travel, it was the two nannies. It was pre-really hardcore personal branding on social media. Although one of my heroes at that conference in Vegas, that was also kind of like this amazing, epic point when I felt like I was just good things were coming. Mm-hmm. Is I'm giving this workshop in Vegas to, and they moved me to the big ballroom and they said, "Whatever's going on, we're moving to the big ballroom." And as I begin my talk, I see Grant Cardone in the front row, one of the masters of marketing. Masters, I mean, he's done so many amazing things in that world. And I was super proud. I was saying, there he is. He's taking notes about stuff that I'm going to be talking about, lead gen and some really cool cutting edge stuff. Mm-hmm. And I never really, I was sort of building on that saying, okay, how do I brand myself personally? How do I go to the next level? And the next level for me, that would not be the time to go to the next level. It was the time actually that I ended up just rebuilding completely or having to face to rebuild.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Ooh-wee. And so what was one of the causes of your wife saying, "I'm done, I want to get a divorce"? Mm.
Two things. One, we were growing apart. There was just a few years there where I was traveling almost nonstop, 2 and 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. And I think I suffered from what a lot of men I talk to suffer, feeling underappreciated, neglected, feeling all those feelings that a lot of men feel. And I certainly felt that. And that turned into an emotional affair I had with a woman, not a physical affair. And I didn't even know the language to call it. And I thought when somebody called that, I thought, what a load of shit, an emotional mm-hmm. affair. Mm-hmm. I see it now as a huge mistake I made. I was traveling constantly and I was talking to a woman that I knew really well and never thought of her that way. She was friends of the family. And when she asked me how my relationship, she said, "You seem really down. Is everything okay?" Mm-hmm. And I never heard the idea of an emotional relationship before. And I made a big mistake and I confided in her without any bad intentions. And a lot of times things can end up that way. Things can turn out bad, but they take a single small step. In hindsight, I realized a very small step and it was 100% my fault. It wasn't my wife's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault. I told her, yeah, I'm not doing really well. Things are, I'm sort of struggling. And I confided in her as a friend with no bad intentions. But I think as a man, now I've learned no other woman needs to know about my relationship with my wife. There's no business I have sharing that with any other woman. At that time, I wasn't aware of that. And I shared. And what it created was a little bit of a bond. And she became sort of my relationship coach. It started out really innocent. And 2 years have been into this, my marriage, where it was really coming apart. And then we're moving into three, and it was very distant. And financially, and the rest of the world thought we were doing great, but mentally and emotionally, I felt very, very disconnected from my wife. And I tried awkwardly to try to have those conversations, and it wasn't working. I felt self-righteous because I wasn't, my needs weren't being met. And I felt more and more self-righteous about things, and then angry, frustrated, all those feelings. And I developed a friendship with this woman. And then after about a year of developing a friendship with this woman, it blossomed into, I was looking at her one night and I thought, she should be the one I'm with. And from then on, it was fighting that feeling. Every time I saw her, I was emotionally connected to her. And it happened thread by thread by thread without any intention, almost like anything that you get into that starts innocently enough, and then it's like quicksand. The deeper you're in it, the more you fall. And then for me, it was one of these things, almost like an addiction. But it starts out really innocent until you've basically abdicated all of your personal agency. And try as I might to extricate myself the situation, I was more and more drawn. And I felt that I should have been with her. And so I told my wife, I said, listen, I can't do this anymore. We need to go in different directions. And I said, it's not working for me. And she said, it's not working for her either. And for about, gosh, 6 months, we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then finally, I think she got fed up with it because she said, listen, I'm all in. Let's make this thing work. But by then, I felt like I was just done. I was done with it. And unfortunately, I hadn't really spoken up maybe the way I should have spoken up and connected the way I should have connected. And by that time I was done. So she said, me too. And I filed for divorce, or she filed for divorce.
You don't think that that other woman was probably like setting you up to possibly get a divorce because you are a successful man and you probably have the things that she will want in a man?
The thought crossed my mind. The thought crossed my mind, and it crossed my mind multiple times. And whenever I went down that road, what it started to lead me to is me not taking responsibility. Like, I had friends, well-meaning friends, that say, look, dude, it wasn't all your fault. And they pointed out all the reasons why there were other factors at play. And that all may be true. But in the end, it doesn't change anything. I'm not in control of her. I'm not in control of my wife. I have to get in control of what I'm in control of. I'm in control of my thoughts. I'm in control of my behaviors. And so, as I started to entertain those thoughts, all it really did is sort of let me off the hook and take my eye off the ball of what I could control. And so, it is possible. And it is, there's all kinds of things I went down, like thinking, well, it's interesting that she found me really interesting when I was super successful and I lost it all. It's interesting how people don't laugh at your jokes and find you nearly as attractive when you're broke. When you're freaking broke, nobody's laughing at your jokes, and it's very difficult to find friends when you're getting flushed down the tube. When you're on the way up, and once you get past a certain point, oh, you're a fucking genius. Everybody thinks you're a genius. But on your way down, twice as many people are there to kick you and turn their backs on you. And it's a very lonely time. I mean, I never felt more lonely in my life as I lost the company and people went away and my marriage fell apart. And the woman I was dating, oh, she wanted nothing to do with me. I mean, I was going right down the tubes. And all of a sudden, I realized that I had to start defining myself differently. I had to start showing up. I had to start showing up differently. I had to start behaving differently. I had to think about my life differently. I had to reevaluate what I was going to bring to the world. I had to reevaluate my identity as a man, because my identity as a successful business owner was fucking gone. I mean, that was obliterated in 1,000 pieces. I had $46, and my kids, they were real tiny. They climb into my bed one night, and it's probably in September-ish. And I was working my way out of it at the time because I shut the business down in June, July of 2018. And I had $46 in my account. I was paying off the line of credit. And they said, "Where are we going to go for Christmas?" And I looked at Citizens Business Bank, my app. It says $46. Nowhere. I mean, nowhere. Dating wasn't even on my mind anymore. It was survivalist. How am I going to pay for gas? How am I going to pay for food? How am I going to do anything? I've got electric bill. I've got private school payments. I've got a now an alimony or a child support payment, a mortgage. How am I going to survive? And what am I going to tell my kids if I can't keep it together? That was a new big question. My pride was in a thousand pieces on the ground. I blamed the other woman. I blamed my wife. I blamed everybody. For a period of time, I blamed everybody until I realized that blaming them wasn't going to change my situation at all. I could be right all day long and I'd still be all day long and I'd still be broke and it still wouldn't change my situation at all. And that really, once I cycled through that, I realized the only productive thing was for me to take responsibility for I am the sum total of all the decisions I made to this point, good or bad. I got myself here. Now, what am I going to do to get myself out? What am I going to do to move forward? How am I going to get through this? And what's the first step? And the first step was taking total responsibility. And I know it sounds real corny and you can read all these different personal development books, but that literally was the first step. What is the first step for me to rebuild? And blame wasn't a fucking answer. It wasn't going to get me anything.
That's one thing that I've discovered when it comes to like self-help is that a lot of the things that we hear is just so simple that we often forget that it's still useful. Like I've always heard, take full responsibility for your life. Anything that happens is your fault. You are responsible. But it's man, whatever. You overlook it because it's not difficult enough for you to. It's not as complex. But then after things started happening personally in my life, I was like, man, a lot of those little corny or cliche sayings was kind of right.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's like, I mean, because I have tons of books, I'm reading, I'm reading, I'm reading. But then I was just like, sometimes you just have to stop and just be practical about what you know and put it into practice and just go. Like I see you have a lot of books in your background, you're a reader and things like that. But then do you ever think we're like there comes to a point where you're just like, man, I have to stop searching and actually put something into action when it comes to my life and myself.
Wow, 100%. 100%. A good idea doesn't mean anything unless you apply it and you take action. And then through action, you get feedback. Maybe it's a rejection. Maybe it's the wrong answer. Maybe it works a little bit, but not the way you wanted it to. But it's feedback. Until you take some sort of action, yeah, you're dead in the water. And for me, I was on a run one morning. I decided I got to turn this thing around. So I just took a run. It was a walk that turned into a jog. And then on that jog, I thought, wait a second, what if I could do for myself what I did for all my clients. And I work off of a basic marketing model I call the SMART 90 blueprint. It starts with starting with an ideal customer, designing core messages around that ideal customer with specific lead magnets to build a first touch relationship and then deepen that relationship. Any marketer can kind of tell you a basic system. Now, I had a system. I have a system today. And all of a sudden, I had an opportunity to actually apply it to my own life. And I showed in my workshops and I wrote down my plan. I decided to target the audience I was going to go for, the specific number I needed in 90 days to survive and to get out of this, and the tools I was going to use. And I started documenting like crazy. And so the interesting thing about taking action is nobody, except maybe in movies, there's that brief moment when they have that montage. Maybe it's a Rocky or maybe it's whatever it is. But the thing about life is there's no soundtrack. When that alarm goes off at 4 or 3:30 or 3, and it's actually time to get the fuck out of bed and take action on that thing you had in your brain the night before, there's no music that comes on unless you put it on. There's no YouTube that comes on unless you put it on. And while you're doing that thing, while I was doing that thing, which was first thing, I just wanted to work out in the morning to get my body moving and to read and journal and meditate and do some certain things to prime my body. While I'm doing those things, I'm fighting this thought, what the fuck are you doing any of this for? Is exercise really going to help you? You are so out of shape right now. It's not like it's going to do it. Like that voice is going off, and that's the battle. And then I've come to believe that that's the battle. That's the battle, and that's the win. If you could get through that, you become harder and tougher in that moment. That's going to carry you through the day a little bit. And even if you do your plan that day and it doesn't work, but at least when you go to bed at night, you have a little bit of self-respect. But you fucking tried. You took one step. It's like I've had a bunch of friends that are in AA, right? Or in some version of that. And they're like, keep coming back. It works if you work it, right? And there's a saying they have, 30 meetings in 30 days. And I was around that so much growing up because my dad was a member, and I was there to celebrate birthdays. So I would hear these things over and over again. Don't stop before the miracle happens. And there's this period, there's this lag time that all of the folks in your audience have endured, have heard, have either given up during or made it through and experienced the blessings, the magic, the fucking like amazing little things that happen. Because when you first start that first week, you get kind of a pump. You kind of like, okay, I could do this. And then guess what happens? Fucking nothing. But you're sore. You lose money on some bullshit thing you tried to do. The sales calls you made flopped. Your ex-wife is now actually even more pissed, and she's wanting to do all this other shit. And it like piles on you. And it's like the second week is actually worse than the first because all the shit you tried, you get shit results. But that's when you're tested. So then you double down. You double down and you either pray or you get centered or you go on that workout or you meditate or whatever that is, that thing that gives you that extra fucking juice to try to get going again. And the second week, you come back and you start to do it again. And then nothing happens. And you repeat that for two, three, four, whatever that period of time is. And your brain the entire time, my brain the entire time was going, you're fucked, dude. You're so fucked. But fighting that and winning week after week after week, month after month after month, got me to the point where 90 days into it, I went into the bank and I paid off $500,000 line of credit. 100%. I show that picture in my workshops. I got it on my Facebook page. I got it on my Instagram account. And my brain, rather than recognizing that as a win, actually was like, you're still fucking broke. You're still broke. And in this thing in my head, I was still thinking, I still don't have any money. I made money and I gave it right to the bank. And I think in that process, little by little by little, today, I credit everything to daily habits, rain or shine, whether I want to or not. By doing those daily things, whether I'm being rewarded or not, I recognize those things as my saving grace, as like the currency to become the man I want to be and I need to be to step up for my family, because those things created the wins, the little wins that turned into bigger wins and the bigger wins. But it was getting through that lag time. And some people call it the valley, oh gosh, like the valley of discontent. It's like that period when things are taking off, but then all of a sudden the effort doesn't match the reward and we take a dive. What do we do in that valley of discontent? Do we quit or give up? Do we start a new game? Do we just lay down and die? Or do we just persist regardless of how we're being rewarded? Because then that becomes the reward is internally that says to you, no matter what, I will not fucking quit, because that's who I am. And I would rather go down trying than not try at all. And that's where I think for me that the magic started to happen, as I endured that week and week after week after week after, I became a better, stronger version of me.
I mean, that's entrepreneurship in a bubble, though. That's
Every day, every week.
you keep going, you keep going, you keep going, you waste money, lose money, you don't have any money, but I tell people, like, you often have to psych yourself out or manipulate yourself or be a little delusional and just keep going. Because I feel like nowadays we're at a point, and I'm glad you mentioned that you have this internal battle, because we're at a point where everybody just tries to be super positive and act like the negative or the dark doesn't exist. And I'm like, it exists in me for sure. You know what I mean? It's like I have that voice telling me, like, oh man, what the fuck are you doing? You're supposed to be this, you're supposed to be doing this, like what's going on? And I'm panicking inside because it's I need money, I need this, I need that. I have to, like you said, buy food, buy gas. And I'm just like, you know what? I have to be stronger than that voice. That voice is still there, but the voice is more so like protecting me from some of the decisions that I'm making or what I'm doing. You know what I mean? And I embrace that voice now. I'm just like, I know you're there. I understand. But everything's going to be okay. Trust me, I got this. Yeah. Going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep going. Every success story I've ever listened to in my life was not just like a 1, 2, 3, and we made it. You know what I mean? It was always a struggle. Anybody that has made anything of themselves, substantial. So me researching that and me knowing that, it's kind of like you have to go through it too. There's no exception to that rule. You know what I mean? I love how you have Muhammad Ali on your wall. I have a picture of Muhammad Ali fighting Sonny Liston like right there. I'm not going to turn my camera, but yeah. But then I feel like since we both have it on our wall and we both are like, we admire Muhammad Ali, we know that he is a symbol of perseverance. Not giving up, becoming a champion and remaining a champion no matter what life throws at you. And he is a great testament to that. If you really look at his story and look at what he's went through, it's, oh, you're the champion, huh? Oh, okay. Well, now you're drafted to go to the war. What are you going to do now? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's crazy, man. But, you know, I just wish that a lot of people were a lot more honest about it. Like, I feel like now we're at an entrepreneurship wave where it's kind of like they try to create entrepreneurs out of people that don't really have what it takes.
Yeah, they get washed out. They get washed out. It's a special breed that will make it as an entrepreneur. I don't think you can. I think are you born or made a salesperson? Are you born or made? I think you have to be a special sort of psyche to, and a glutton for punishment in many ways to be an entrepreneur. Over a period of time, I've been an entrepreneur and a business owner of multiple businesses over 25, 30 years. And it's a different life. It's a different life. And you have to be prepared for that. And you have to be prepared for that. And I think that's where I gravitated towards total accountability. You talked about Muhammad Ali. Two people kind of come to mind, and they're very different, but Wes Watson and David Goggins. I'll never forget when I read David Goggins' book. I read David Goggins' book going through this, as well as Tim Grover's. Tim Grover's was all about being a cleaner, about taking total responsibility. I don't know if you remember Tim Grover's book, Relentless, but he talks about there's like coolers, something, and then cleaners. And cleaners, what was it? Coolers, something, and
damn, I forgot.
Closers. Cooler, closers, and cleaners. Coolers, they just chill. They're on and off. Closers, when it's game night, I'll play. Cleaners are on it every single day, day in and day out. Kobe Bryant was an extreme example of an elite athlete every single day during game season, during off season. I mean, this guy was pushing himself. He was a cleaner every single day. He gave his very best. And other people had to if they were going to play with him, they had to raise their game. He had zero patience. Same thing with Jordan.
Yeah.
Goggins wrote in his book, The Accountability Mirror. Have you heard of The Accountability Mirror?
No.
Do you remember? The Accountability Mirror is, and I'm going to probably mess it up a little bit, but this was a game changer for me. In it, it's like chapter one of David Goggins' Can't Hurt Me, or one of the very first chapters. And it's about stepping in front of the mirror. And I invite any one of your folks that's listening or whatever to try this. You got to have courage to do this. Step in front of the mirror and you make direct eye contact with yourself and hold it and start asking yourself the question, are you proud of you? Are you proud of the decisions you're making? Are there any decisions you're making right now that don't move you in the direction that you want to move? And start having a really honest conversation about your habits, your behaviors, what you're thinking about, what you're feeding yourself mentally, physically, spiritually. And as you start to have that honest conversation, just like Jordan Peterson talks about, it won't be long if we're honest with ourselves to identify at least one juicy way that you aren't, if you haven't fucked up your life yet, You're working on it because that thing will become to light and it'll manifest and it's not going to be pretty. And when I did that, I was still drinking. I was still doing a lot of stuff that I'm not, I avoid now. When I stepped in front of the mirror, I mean, I looked at myself physically. I started thinking about what I was doing spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and I just broke down. And he was talking about getting mad. He's like, it's time to fucking get real. And so I was alone in my house. My kids were at my ex-wife's. And I started just, I went apeshit. I was just like, I had a real, honest to God, not putting myself down like you're a piece of shit and you're never going to amount to anything. But here's rolling down my eyes going, you could do better, bro. You could fucking do better.
Oh, so hold on real quick. You were like chubby, out of shape.
It, just like doughy, dad bod, okay. Fucking yeah. Doughy. I'm drinking at that point, I was drinking half a bottle of wine every other night. And what kind of real shape are you going to be in when you're putting down that kind of booze and like eating like shit? And I wasn't 200, 300 pounds. I mean, I'm a small guy, 5'10", 5'9 and a half. Mm-hmm. So 185, but just kind of doughy. And I was not proud of me. And I was not proud of my life. And I knew I needed to be operating at a better level. I knew I needed to show up as the best me possible. And then I would get hammered and be hungover. And as I was laying there hungover in the morning, I'd be thinking to myself, this is it? Are you proud of this? And then I'd read a book and I'd get pumped up for 5 days and I'd do it again and then do it again and then do it again. And I'd yell at my kids or get pissed at my ex-wife about something and feel like a fucking victim about whatever it was and be self-righteous about being a victim. Well, she shouldn't be doing this and she shouldn't be doing this. But inside, it's that dark place that every man goes or is afraid to go. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what they're capable of or what they should be doing. And when I wasn't listening to that small voice to tell me to move in this new direction, I realized I wasn't lying to other people. I was lying to myself. And you can't possibly be congruent as a man and show up the way you want to show up if you know you're fucking lying to yourself. It doesn't right. matter if all my buddies are telling me we're doing good. If I know I'm bullshitting myself, I really don't show up the way I know I should. And that was the accountability mirror. And it was a powerful moment. And that in that moment, I started thinking about the changes that I needed to make and started making those changes little by little by little.
That's interesting because I feel like when it comes to men, especially like fathers and husbands, we have to have so many different things checked off as far as like us being our best selves. Like you have two daughters, right?
A daughter and a son.
Yeah. Oh, daughter and a son. Okay. So imagine your daughter looking up to you and like you say, you're doughy, you're hungover, you're out of shape, you're this, you're that. What kind of man will your daughter look for when it comes to a mate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when you really take yourself out of it and think about the people you're affecting unconsciously, like you think that everything is all good, but this is affecting people and you don't even know it. You know what I mean? I remember me being a kid, I was interested in smoking, but I would find my dad's smoking materials in his on this cabinet or around. So right. I was like amazed by it or seeing them drinking alcohol and things like that. So it's like, oh man, this is just what we do. Have a drink. Oh, we all getting together, have a drink. But then for me, when I would drink, I'll turn into a whole different type of person. Like my demons will come up and I'll be in a trance, drink, smoke, whatever. And it got so bad where people were like, maybe you should stop. And then I started thinking about it. I was just like, why am I continuously putting myself in this headspace and in this emotion? I shouldn't have to drink or smoke to have a good time or to enjoy myself or to feel a certain type of feeling. You know what I mean? And so that's when I was like, I had to be accountable. And I was like, you know what, man, I'm not doing this. And it's so crazy because when I go to gatherings, people are like, yeah, man, I got the alcohol or I got this. And I'm like, nah, I don't drink at all. What? You don't drink? What do you do then? Nothing. It's such a tradition where it's just, but I'm looking at the people that are drinking and even though they're the successful people or whatever, right? But it's still, you're still slipping. You know what I mean? Because I could tell that your mind isn't right. Like you might have achieved this goal, this goal, this goal, but you don't ever want to put yourself in a position to be like slipping in any kind of way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Say when you said that I would be pumped up, then I'll probably, oh, you know what, man? I did all this. I could probably have a drink. Then you wake up feeling like shit.
Yep. I'd celebrate. That's how I'd celebrate. I'd reward myself.
Come on. That's how we reward ourselves?
Yeah, bullshit. Yeah, by treating yourself like shit. Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, how about just going to the beach and sitting down and looking at your kids and enjoy? You know what I mean? There's plenty of other ways to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plenty of other ways.
You just reminded me of something. Another Goggins that talks about being uncommon among uncommon men. And I remember when I read that, I was still building my new business. And I'm a member of a group called Entrepreneur Organization. Mm-hmm. And these are the elite 1%. They all, you got to make $1 million. I guess it's 4% of all businesses in the US get to 4% or less get to a million. I think it's 0.4% get to 10 million. But see, these are the 4% of all business owners. They're members of Entrepreneur Organization and they're above. That's like the floor, a million and up, and the founding member or the majority owner. So I'm a member of this group and I'm rolling with these guys. And I remember showing up feeling just like a piece of shit, feeling like a fake, like a fraud. I'm still a member, but I don't have a business and I'm struggling, or I have a new business and I'm just struggling to figure out which way I was going to go with it. And I'm reading this book, Be Uncommon Amongst Uncommon Men. So how do you show up at an organization like that, at a retreat, at an event, at a dinner or a breakfast or a learning event, and not feel like a freaking fraud? And then it occurred to me, I could wake up earlier. I could work out harder. I could read one more book than these other motherfuckers. They might have more money, but they're not going to outwork me. And so I got obsessed with these daily habits. And I looked at Goggins and he was like, I'm going to wake up earlier. I'm going to work out harder. They're going to take Saturday or Sunday off. I'm going to do two on Saturday and two on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And like he had this mindset, like they may be better in all these areas, but I'm going to find out the areas that I can control. Mm-hmm. What I eat, how much sleep I get, whatever that is. And I'm going to work on those areas. And that hit me. And I thought, so we went to this one retreat down in San Diego. I'll never forget, like breakfast was at 8. Dude, I was up at 3:30 doing my morning workout in my room, reading, journaling, meditating. And it didn't change my finances 1 cent when I rolled down to breakfast at 7:30, but I saw the hungover eyes on some. Mm-hmm. I saw the sleepers in others, and others are sharp as a tack. There's some people that are just doing the same thing I'm doing and not resting, but that's that certain percentage. And then I'd ask him, hey, what time did you get up this morning? Like, oh, I got up my normal time, 5. Like, okay, 3:30. And it didn't give me an extra penny, but I had that mental kind of advantage. I felt like that was something I could control. And having that measure of control in a world where you can't control shit, that became the game for me. That became everything. These daily habits that I could control. And then the world would throw all this stuff at me. It'd be a later dinner than normal. Well, okay, so how committed am I now that I'm going to get 5 hours of sleep or 4 hours of sleep? How committed am I? When everybody goes to the bar, everybody goes, Scott, you're going to roll with us? No, I'm not. I'm not, but I'm going to go home. Or what happens when adversity shows up, either the internal adversity things or the external adversity, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard as heck to actually maintain that personal discipline and those daily habits. But by doing that against all odds, there's two wins that I found I had. One is that mental edge, but two, you're stacking up little wins on top of little wins, and you're making 3 more calls for your business every day. You're learning 3 more concepts for your business every fucking day. Mm-hmm. And then I started going to 6 days a week and I found a bunch of entrepreneurs that are insane. I wake up, Rico Ordinez and Greg Walker, we get up at 4 o'clock on Saturdays and we have an accountability call first thing in the morning. And these are really successful dudes. And I'm like the low man on the totem pole, but I started rolling with these guys because they're non-drinkers. They're aggressive as heck. They're super successful. And I want to roll with them. So we do it 6 days a week, these morning routines and check-ins, and talk about our number one thing for our business that week. And that gave me an advantage. And so maintaining those discipline week after week, day after day, you stack those W's. And then that's the magic, is whenever that happens, it can be 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, but it's inevitable. The earth will give you the reward if you put in the work day in and day out. For me, that's been true. It took me longer, but it happened.
Damn. That hit me, man. Cause I mean, just recently, like Yesterday, I deactivated all of my social media accounts after I had this interview with the spiritual guy, right? I was like, oh, let me. I was talking to him, and I didn't think about this until I started talking about it, right? And it's crazy how like things could come to you as you're talking about it. And I was like, you know what? I limit my social media on an app limit on my iPhone to 1 hour a day. And then I thought about it. I was like, hold on, 1 hour a day is about 40 hours a month. And that could turn into or whatever the math is, I'm not sure. But that could turn into a whole full-time work week that I'm just spending on
Easy.
social media alone. And I thought about that. I'm like, what else can I do with 40 hours of my time to help me get ahead or as an advantage? You know what I mean? And I have all of these books in my office that I like have not read. I'm sure everybody that's a reader, we have books around that we have never opened. You know what I'm
You
saying?
bet.
That's been there for years. And I'm like, why don't you just take some time out of your night and just start reading these books? Put these ideas and things in your subconscious mind. And I started to feel like a lot more free after that. I'm like, if I maintain this discipline, and as you'll be the only person in the world that does what you're doing. Like, you really can't even go anywhere or do anything because you have to wake up at 4 in the morning. And I remember that. I remember waking up at 4 in the morning, going to the gym, and I just felt amazing for the rest of the
Fire.
day.
I'm fire.
You know what I mean? But then you get invited to an event that
Yeah.
starts at 8:30 or
Yeah.
something, and that just fucks up your whole rhythm.
Percent.
It's hard because if you're not in the bed by 8 o'clock or 8:30, you're gonna be a little off. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so now I'm like, because I woke up at 4:30 today, and it's crazy because I've been putting in my mind, wake up early, wake up early. I miss the times where I used to wake up at 4 o'clock, and I woke up because Amazon delivery came at 4:30 in the morning. And whenever somebody's in the front door, the Alexa goes off, and I was like, "Who's in the front door?" And so I checked. I was like, "Oh, it's an Amazon man," but I just did not fall back asleep. And here I am talking to you, and I'm like, you know what, man? I'm like, because I woke up, I took the trash cans out, made the kids breakfast, this, and that. And I feel like I've already had a long day. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, it's only 12 o'clock. You know what I mean? If I would have woke up at 7 or whatever, this would be nothing. But I'm like, wow, it was the sun was up, you know what I mean? All of this. And I'm like, you know what, man? I need to get back on that type of time because you could accomplish so much within your day because nothing is happening after 8 o'clock or shouldn't be happening.
Nothing you need to be a part of.
No, yeah,
Nothing you
nothing I
need to be a
need to be
part
a part of.
of.
Oh man, we're going to this award dinner. Like, you really have to lock in. And it is a beautiful thing that you have accountability partners that keep you accountable with the things that you're locked in doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is wonderful because, like you said, being an uncommon man around uncommon men. I'm like,
Solid.
man, that's it's
It's good
crazy.
shit.
Yeah, because like now I'm like, oh shit, I'm not crazy. Like, I'm not alone. You know what I mean? Like, last night I'm learning how to trade and stuff like that, learning from these Wall Street bankers, and I'm like, man, you know what? I'm gonna turn this on. I'm gonna study. I'm gonna really get this together because I know if I just focus on this thing for 30 days, I could possibly change the trajectory of my life.
100%.
With
100%.
like no distractions, no nothing. Like, this is what I'm locked in doing. And like you said, I really love that you're saying this because it's like people really don't understand how these small little steps or kinks could like really change their life,
Could
you
be a
know?
tiny tweak.
Yeah, a tiny tweak, you know what I mean? Like, tiny, because people are like, oh man, you're because I work out, obviously, I'm a pretty strong guy, but I'm just like, man, if you only understood how consistent I've been, how many times I've gone in that gym and did the same damn thing every single time for years straight. But then there's people out there that'll make it seem like you must have figured out something special, or you must have taken a special
It's
supplement.
keep
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's
going.
really all it is. And then it's like hearing from a successful entrepreneur as yourself how like you go about your day. Like, I made millions of dollars, yeah, but I wake up at 3:30 in the morning every day. And I have a mentor. I'm in this MBA program, and he told me he has this like super successful friend. And I never forgot this. He was like, he listens to podcasts and audiobooks and reads all day. That's what he just consumes himself with information and knowledge. And I'm like, Spotify now has audiobooks and things like that. And I'm just like, man, I could really do the same thing, telling like how my mind will operate or where I will go. There's only so many times I could listen to Tupac and get something new, or listen to this person and get something new. But if I'm feeding myself information all day, what if I become successful like that man? He's doing something totally out of the ordinary that nobody does, but he's not living an ordinary life.
They make choices that are extraordinary. To be extraordinary, you have to make extraordinary choices. And I had a business coach, I have a business coach. As I was rebuilding, I was giving him all my excuses. And I said, listen, I'm a single dad at the time. I'm waking up at 5:30. And I think I was even waking up at 4:30 at the time. And I said, all right, I'm waking up at 4:30, kind of get myself together. I do a little reading. It's called 10, 10, 10. Read, journal, meditate. 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. But you need flex time to do it. It takes 45 minutes to an hour to do 10, 10, 10. So 4:30 to 5:30. 5:30 to 6:30, I'm working out in the garage. Kids are waking up. They gotta get breakfast. And I get to get them off to school for so now 6:30, 7:30, 8:15. I'm driving them, getting them dressed. So now I'm back in the saddle at my desk by 9. And when they're little, pickup is around 3. So I got 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. And then by 2:30, I gotta leave. So I got 5 hours to go do that. And then there's dinner, there's dance, there's all the baseball, soccer, like all that shit at night. And I'm telling them, and then I'm trying to work from 10 after I finally get him down to midnight, but my brain's mush. And he looks at my calendar. Rule number one, well, two rules he was telling me. Rule number one, when you start a new business is sales. You don't have sales, you don't have a business. So you've got to focus on sales. Two, you're not focusing enough on sales. You are not, you don't have a bottleneck of marketing. You don't have a bottleneck of this. You have a bottleneck of you. When you have a brand new business, you've got to focus and you've got to spend time on that business. It's like a baby. It needs care. It needs feeding. It needs attention. That's what it needs. And it needs a lot. It needs a lot. You're not spending enough time. I'm like, well, I don't know how my calendar is going to flex. And he goes, and he laughs. He goes, I do. He goes, look at your calendar again. And I'm like, what, work later? He goes, no. Work earlier. And that's when he starts suggesting 3:30 or 3. And he goes, just think about it. If you got up at 3:30 and you did your priming, 3:30 to 4:30, 4:30 to 5:30, you could do 5:30, even 7. You got an hour and a half, maybe even 2, if you play your cards right and you make some stuff the night before. You have 2 hours. And he called it morning genius. He's, what if you worked on just sales 2 hours every morning? You got up at 3 and you just, now you got 2 hours from 5 to 7. Of morning genius working on sales for your business. And then the rest of the day belongs to the kids and all the responsibilities and meetings, stuff like that. That's 10 hours a week, 12 hours if you do it 6 days a week, 12, 12, 14, like 48 hours if you a month, stack that for 90 days, you will not believe what'll happen to your business. First, my brain was like thinking all the reasons why I couldn't do 3 and 3:30. But then I was like, screw it. He's got three or four businesses. He's uber successful. I'm now 50. I've got to figure out a way to get back in the game and make it happen now. I don't have 10 years to figure it out. And my situation isn't going to magically change. My kids aren't going to all of a sudden grow up. So this is the hand I'm dealt. So I do it. In probably 2 weeks, I could instantly see how my life was going to be different. And I was addicted. And then I started really managing my time where I got him to bed, got into bed at a reasonable time as much as I could, and started getting up 3:30 and 3. And I haven't looked back. That's been the last 3 years of just stacking those daily habits week in, week out. If you see my social, I literally post a picture at 3 a.m. when it goes off. I screen grab that and post it in my stories to be accountable to other people. And I keep it all on habit tracker or habit share. And I make sure that I'm at 90% of my daily habits or better week in and week out. And I share that every day where I am. I'm at 89% right now. So I'm 1% below. I've been doing that for 3 years. It's been the difference, just being accountable. Even if nobody looked at my stupid story, I do it because I'm fucking accountable and I want to be accountable. That's the level. I've got to be there. I got to be there. And it's made all the difference. And I've had people message me going, "Oh my dude, you got it. You're 89%. You got to get to 90." And I'm out there. I'm sharing that because I want to be accountable. Winners want to be accountable to them be their best selves. Losers hide behind, "Oh, I don't want to be accountable to anybody." And I should say losers, but people that aren't being who they want to be tend to hide and not be accountable because they don't want to be accountable because it's hard.
Well, hell yeah, it's hard. Heck yeah, man. And it's crazy because, like, I found here's my notes from, I'm not sure if you can read it, but it says work those sales muscles again, right? So that was like the last meeting I had with my mentor. He was like, "Sherman, man, you have to be a salesperson again." You know, and I feel like when you're marketing, you just want people to come to you and you know what I mean? Like maybe somebody will hit me up, but then I'm like, man, I was a hell of a salesman because it really brought out my aggressive nature. And I was just like, what the fuck am I doing? I have to be that again because when I was that, my business is skyrocketing. Like when I was like, okay, where is that? Boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, you don't have millions of dollars for advertisement and employees to weave through the people that are bullshitting or whatever. Like you have to have direct contact with people. And then the same exact day, I go to my kid's school. They have a summer kickoff, and I'm talking to a fellow dad, and he was like, "The internet stuff is cool, but there's nothing like direct human connection."
100%.
And you've been an online marketer, right? So you understand this, but the companies that you've made successful had the money and the manpower to actually make things happen. And so I feel like that's a whole different battle when you put out an advertisement and you have 30 salespeople running those leads and stuff like that. Okay, something is gonna happen. But if you're just like a solopreneur or it's just you have to play it a little different.
If it's a service, there's marketing, which generates leads, and there's sales, which closes leads. There's got to be a mechanism, a process to respond, qualify, and convert to a sale. 100%. And if you're, and if you think you're going to sell a professional service by just advertising it, I wish you the best of luck in the world. I haven't figured that one out.
Man, seriously, man, because I used to do mortgage sales on the phone, and I was like, man, these people are paying me. They're paying the credit companies to pull these people credit. They're paying all of these things just so I could have the ability to possibly convert. You know what I mean? And I was just like, sheesh, like you really have to think about that because your money can go down the drain. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm like, the way I'm thinking about it is, okay, I mean, I would like to be that one day, but like you said, you have to really get into sales. You have to call people, send email. Hey, what's up, man? Hey, because it's sending a text, sending an email. That could only do so much. The guy told me, he was like, man, you got to think about it. People are online and they're getting so much stuff bombarded at them that it's like they'll see what you're doing. Just okay, next, 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 next. You know what I mean?
I've had more clients where on the marketing we're firing, but if the sales there's a fall down or there's a miss on the sales side, then the whole thing collapses. And I know that for my program and particularly even on the marketing side. So I have an AI marketing course, but one of the key things that I do is I turn. So I've got my agency clients that are 20,000 and up spend, and we'll do full turnkey stuff for them. But then I had all these clients coming to me saying, "Hey, I want to get more involved in the AI marketing side. I want to understand the right apps, how I can automate and systematize and do some of these things." And so we've got all that for them. And I put together a coaching program, but I learned actually from another coach that it's nothing without accountability. So now it's part of my AI marketing course and coaching program. They have daily and weekly non-negotiables that I put on them. And I say, "Listen, if you're going to do this, you have here's three things, six things, five things you're going to do every week, come rain or shine. And then we will have the monthly catch-up call. If you don't do those things, there's no point us having the catch-up call because I can't do these things for you." And that's that sort of that idea that marketing is this magic thing where we won't have to do anything. And I suppose there might be certain types of products where that can work, although it takes a heck of a lot of work to set up the ads, to run the ads, run the funnels. But for many of us that have professional service, it's a hands-on thing. And you have to be prepared to handle the leads, to manage the leads, and do the work. There's work. to be done for sure on all of these things. And I know that was the case in my book.
Yeah, and it's definitely a case in mind. I wrote all of that down. You brought it up. I'm like, damn, I have to time block and really think about selling. Because it's like, I mean, I would love to do what I do and not have to call people or do this or do that. Because, you know, sales is tough and you have to be aggressive. But I'm like, nah, man, I have to tap back into that. Maybe I need to listen to a David Goggins speech or something after. Nah, man, I listen to David Goggins and the next couple weeks I'm at the Spartan race, just like getting it in. Because that guy is like so intense and so militant. And
so
some
intense.
Of the stuff that he like talks about, it's like, oh shit, you put yourself through that. And yeah. I also listen to Wes Watson too. I like how Wes Watson moves, how confident, how sure he is of himself and with the non-negotiables and things like that. But he does have a little couple things he needs to work on. But if you just look at some of the things he talks about, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I did hear you mention him earlier. But besides business, right? Because I know we could talk about that for the next hour. So after you lost your business and not lost your business, but you got into debt and all
shut
that
it
stuff,
all down. Yeah.
And I remember you saying that you picked yourself up by a friend contacting you, right? And basically bringing you back to life. So can we talk about that and that whole process?
Yeah. There's two parts to that. One was 4th of July. I was hungover, middle of the day, probably 1 PM, still laying in bed. And I'm on a WhatsApp group with my entrepreneur buddies. I get WhatsApp saying, hey, bro, you got to come over this 4th of July party. I'm not answering. They've hit me up 2 or 3 times. Hey, Ampringham, you there? And then finally it turns out, hey, you okay? And I had a question I was sort of asking myself, do I answer honestly? No, I'm not. I'm a mess. And I was in a really dark place. And I was thinking about, I come to the conclusion pretty much that there was no way out of this, that I was going to lose the house. This is about 2 weeks after I shut the business down, maybe 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't possibly see a way out of this. And the bank had already called saying, we need our first payment, an accelerated, inflated payment, because there's no asset behind any of the line of credit. We need our first payment, like $20,000, and it's in 90 days from now. And I thought, okay, $20,000 mortgage. And I was just stacking. And I was at the bottom of the biggest mountain I could possibly think about being. And now they're asking me, am I okay? And what's really going through my head was, I got a gun in my safe and I got a short answer to this that could take us all out, take me out of misery right now. And I'm fucking thinking about that. It's going through my head. And they're asking me if I'm okay. And so all I said was, no, I'm not. Immediately my phone lights up. 2 guys call me from my group and I just am fucking bawling. I'm like, nah, I'm a wreck. I don't know what I'm going to do. Guy hangs up. He's in Laguna Beach. He's in the middle of his 4th of July party, drives over, bangs on my door. And I didn't want to answer the door, but I go down and answer it. And we have a conversation. And in that conversation, after about 20 minutes of me sort of talking about where I was, he grabs a picture of my daughter, my kids. And he basically does what you and I were just talking about. He said, I totally get where you are and I'm sorry you're there. But let me ask you a question. How do you want your kids to see you in this moment? How do you want your kids to remember you moving forward? The guy who fucking quit, or the guy who tried? The guy who laid down and died, or the guy who died trying? The guy who tried and won, or the guy who just gave up? Which one do you want to be? Because either way, you have a choice to make, and the choice you make is going to determine how you feel about yourself and how your kids feel about you. And he kept stacking this pain and pleasure on this thing. And it was overwhelming. And I remember thinking, he got under my skin about the pain of what I would think if my kids saw me quit, how awful that would be. And then the flip side was, he did 2 things I thought were pretty good. He said, one is, even if you fail, wouldn't you rather see your kids, or wouldn't you rather have your kids see you trying? And he goes, and if you could turn it around, you're a marketing guy, wouldn't that be the greatest marketing story of all time that you could tell?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that David Goggins saying, what if? And at that moment, there was a crack in the darkness, a little light cut through of what if. I thought, well, what if I could turn it around? David Goggins talked about that too. And he's, what if I could? And that was enough for me to kind of stand up in that light and play in that space of what if. And that gave me the confidence, the whatever it was, the inspiration to think, well, here's what the plan could look like. And then I started taking action. Once I started taking action and built some momentum and had some early sales, even though there were small sales that came in, the next piece that fell for me, the next piece that came into place for me was one night I was praying. And I remember reading Matthew, you will know them by their fruit. And I forget the exact verse and I should know it by now. But I started thinking about some of the friends in my life that had this light about them, that had this confidence, this peace of mind, that had lived a fulfilling life. And I know very successful guys that are miserable. I know healthy guys that are miserable, but these guys had essentially what I wanted, meaning strong family life, strong spiritual life, good physical health. Like just they had a light about them. And I remember praying and saying, this is the foundation I need. I want to be baptized. It just felt right in my heart. I felt it. I just felt this tap on the shoulder that this is the direction. It's like few times in my life, I felt totally congruent about knowing exactly what I need to do next. I mean, I think I'm 55 and I've probably had about five or four of those moments. I act, most of my decisions are made on 80% information, 90% information, kind of leaps of faith where I don't know how it's going to turn out. This was a totally congruent decision. I picked up the phone, I called my buddy, and I said, I want to be baptized. And he talked to me about this like 30 years before. And he kind of laughed and said, well, it only took you 30 years, but let's get you going. And the thing that I knew that I understood for me was if I built the business again, I could do that. Like I had some early successes right away. And I realized that if I built on top of a bad foundation, a cracked foundation, a fundamentally flawed foundation, it would all come down again and I'd repeat the mistakes over and over again. So that became my determination to say if, to see if I could fix those cracks, if I could address those cracks, if I could heal those cracks and build a stronger foundation, what could happen? Once I did that, once I was baptized, once I made that decision, once I started to follow commandments and make covenants and do my best, and I felt short a bunch of times, but once I moved in that direction, miracles started happening in my life. Physical health came to me faster than I could have imagined. Financial health. I remarried my first wife. I remarried my first wife. I mean, that was against all odds. That relationship was shattered on the ground. My relationship was just shattered on the ground, but that changed everything. And little by little, we started co-parenting. That blossomed into a friendship, blossomed into an engagement, blossomed into remarrying my first wife. I mean, that was an impossibility that
Hell
that was going to
yeah.
happen. But
Well,
here it
and
is.
didn't you say that she got engaged after you guys had broke up?
Yeah, she was engaged. I was dating somebody, and I could have never imagined any of those things were going to happen, but there they were. She showed up one day as we were co-parenting without a ring on. I noticed it. I asked her about it. She just sort of brushed it off. But we had lunch a few more times, dinner a few more times, talking about the kids. And then one day I said, are we on a date? And she said, yeah, I think we are. And I found out her and him had split up a couple of months ago, and we were off and running.
I know you were like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I
I
was.
like that guy anyway.
He was a dick. No, he was a fuck. But I was stoked. I was stoked, and I saw it was like a new day for me. I certainly didn't wish him any bad, but I was certainly happy I had some good in my life. And once that door was open, I raced through it. And within a short period of time, I talked to the kids, and I'll never forget. I sat the kids down. She wasn't around. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about asking, or I'm going to ask mom to marry me. And I said, I want to make sure that you guys are okay with that. And Nick, to my son, he was like 8 at the time. I said, would you be my best man? And he came up, gave me a big hug, and he held back the tears. But when I could see him holding back the tears, I got teary-eyed, and my daughter was just like, yeah. And I could see the look on their face, and it melted my heart. And it was just another confirmation. It was 1,000% right. It was a right thing for me. It was a right thing for my family. And I couldn't believe that just a few years ago, we were locked in this legal thing and saying things to each other that no husband or wife or ex, whatever, should ever say. And it was destroyed in a thousand pieces. I never would have imagined it. But I think that without getting preachy, that's the healing power of this divine, of
Well,
this thing that I don't
let's get
understand.
preachy. Let's get preachy. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's as far as I can tell, it's a healing power of Christ. I don't understand it. I don't know how it works. I just know in my life it has worked miracles that I couldn't even imagine. I was on, now I speak all over the world. I mean, fast forward, I'm in Guadalajara just a month ago, and I'm getting paid to travel all over the world and give speeches. I'm making money that is fantastic money, and it's piling up, and I'm serving people all over the world. And we're in the lobby of this hotel, and we're sitting on the couch, and there's this guy singing a song, and he's playing acoustic. And I got my wife on this side and my kids on this side, and we just came back for this beautiful dinner, and I just start bawling and I'm crying. And my wife looks at me and goes, what's the matter? I said, I'm just so happy. We are so blessed. How did I get so lucky? I mean, we are so blessed. And I don't know how to explain it other than for me, my faith is my number one thing. And I told that to my wife. I said, I want my faith is the number one thing. On top of that is health, so I can serve my family. Family comes third, and then finances. It used to be flipped. Faith was gone, health was gone, and it was just business. And then if I could fit in family, I believe differently now. My faith is my number one thing. Every Sunday I'm at church. It's a day of rest. I don't care what I have going on. It's a day of rest, and I do my best to honor those commandments and walk that walk.
Man, that's amazing. It's such a mess, especially during a time where it's like people's faith is withering. Oh man, you don't want to believe that and all this, and oh man, you don't want to go. But then I often tell people, I'm like, I understand where you're coming from, but it's always good to fellowship about great things, no matter if it's church, the mosque, or like Buddha, whatever. It's still like that energy that you're getting. And I feel like people try to pick and check in what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing, or whatever. And I'm like, man, it's really whatever resonates with you. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? Like, there's some people that grew up Catholic, and then they're like, you know what? I'm going to go to a church and, like you said, get baptized. And that's what's in their heart. And they do it. And then they end up changing their whole life. And I often feel that, well, I feel this when it came to the reason why you felt so happy is because you really knew how it felt to be at the bottom and lose
Yeah.
everything. And I'm witnessing a lot of divorces with kids involved today. And I feel like a lot of people don't, they try to act, oh, it's gonna be okay, or oh, this. I'm like, no, man, that has to be a painful thing to go through, to have your kids every single day, or have access to them whenever you want, to every other weekend. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Like, how could you? It's no, that hurts. And then you go from that realization to, I have everything that I've had back, but I also have more. You
Right.
know what I mean? You may not, I'm not sure if you're making as much money as you did back then, but I'm sure that it probably doesn't matter to you as much, because
It's more than enough.
it's, yeah, it's like I have the necessities, I have
Yeah.
time, I'm able to take my kids here, there, spend time. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's more than enough. You
Well,
know, like
like you
maybe four
said,
or five homes.
there was a time in it was Christmas, and I'm in the airport. No, I'm at that hotel in Dearborn, Michigan, at a Hyatt Dearborn. Now, I had millions in the bank, but did I feel rich when I'm at the Hyatt Hotel Dearborn, it having breakfast with this poor other soul who's serving me breakfast like the day before Christmas or 2 days before Christmas, and I was feeling so lonely, and I had all the money, all the money anybody could need, and I was despondent because the one thing I didn't have was this peace in my heart, this love in my heart for my family. I didn't have that peace, that love, that thing that we all want, which is a feeling of connectedness, a feeling of love. I mean, why do we want the money? So we can have joy. Why do we want joy? So we can have peace. So all this thing comes down usually to, for me, it always came back to connection, contribution, love, peace of mind, security, all these feelings. I felt none of those things, none of those things. And yet I was chasing the money. And then when I chased a foundation with Christ, there was order to it. There was an order to it. It was like, take care of that. Take care of yourself physically. Start getting clean. I was clean off of everything. And then take care of your wife and your family. And then you'll have time, if you're not hungover, if you're not doing all these other stupid fucking things, if you're not doing, if you just eliminate some of the self-sabotage, you have all this time, you have more time than you need to create the life that you've always dreamt of. But it's getting rid of all those distractions, all those negative influences. So once those are out, you have all the time you need to build whatever business you want. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does take a strong mind to actually even figure out what the negative influences are, because a lot of times things are negative influences and we're not even consciously aware of that. It's like, oh, this is just what is. But when I started thinking, I'm like, man, why do I keep putting myself through things and dealing with things I don't need? But then it was like, sometimes we're taught that going through adversity and stuff like that makes you stronger. And that's not really true all the time. You know what I mean?
But it's self-inflicted. You don't need the self-inflicted stuff.
Yes, because I would do that to myself. If I do this, I could come back stronger and I'll be able to say that I've overcame. But then it's like, what is the point after you overcame it? What does it do for you? Absolutely nothing. It's learning things, learning something that's not really going to help you in your life. So, well, did you know that the CIA and woo-doo, I'm like, man, I don't know what to do with that information. How is this going to help me?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the weird conspiracy theories. I'm like, man, I'm done with that. Because you could go in a rabbit hole with that on any social media.
And it's in the end, that's a distraction. You'll have zero influence on any of that stuff. I was telling my daughter got all worked up about something. I said, well, that's something to be interesting. That's something to be worked up about. But I got another thing to be worked about. Start by making your bed and cleaning your room. Let's start with those foundational elements. That Admiral too, that there's a great thing that went viral is, you want to change the world, start by making your bed. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful quote, because what he's really saying is, start with you. Start with the things that God has given you control over, which is agency, the power to choose.
Right.
It's a wonderful thing. That's all you need to start making new decisions. I screw that up all the time, mm-hmm. but I'm getting better at it little by little, and it's made a huge difference in my life. And if we start with the power of agency, the power to choose what we put in our bodies, who we associate with, what we read, what we listen to, what we pay attention to. You're off social media. Wonderful. Now, what are you going to fill that up with? You have this power. That's a superpower, man. That's everything. That's the game.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, I woke up one Sunday morning and I was like, I'm going to change my whole office around and clean it. And I'm in the same place.
Yeah.
Last time you talked to me, but I painted my wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, man, what the fuck? Because I started thinking about it. Because when you're distracted, you really, by so many different things, you really like you're really unaware of certain things in your life. It's like when you're distracted by a few things, it starts to be like a distraction for everything.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. And I was like, I have a podcast, but my background is, what the fuck? What am I doing? So I turned my desk around, painted my wall.
Looks
you
good.
You know what I mean? Yeah, thank you. Me and my daughter, she wanted to help. So I was like, all right, let her do a little something. But man, I really had to get control of certain things. I'm like, why am I sitting in this mess? Why are these papers here? What's going on? You need to read these books. You know what I mean? It's like you said, it's like really taking back the power of choice and not being like chattel in the world. Just everybody wants you to follow this or listen to this. I know you sell a course, but there's a lot of other courses, but I said, fuck all these damn courses. Like, I'm about to get out of all of this stuff and I'm gonna really lock in, because I got just like course happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm
gonna
take this course and maybe I'm gonna do this. And maybe I'm like, man, at the end of the day, you have to apply something.
Got to apply it.
You have to apply it. It's okay, first master something. And then, okay, now say, I know you provide a service, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm like, instead of buying a course, why don't you purchase a service that could help you and then just learn how to manage it or do something from there? I would love to, God willing, one day be like, hey, Scott, what happened to that AI marketing program? You said it's 20,000, right? Okay, here you go. And that's way more effective than me taking a, hey, I'm gonna teach you how to learn AI for $6.99 or whatever, right. Knowing that I don't have the time to right. even like perfect that craft.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? It's okay, this person, they did this and they learned it and they perfected it. But then I started thinking about, I'm like, do you really have the time or the capability to perfect what that person has done?
Right.
Then I was like, no, because you're not, you don't even have that type of personality. So you need to hone in on whatever you're doing, wait to purchase a service that can propel your business further after you receive some income. Because I feel like with the internet now, it's like somebody's always selling you things to get better, and it may can work, but at the end of the day, it's like not the time.
Yeah.
I just don't have the capacity.
Well, it sounds to me like you're definitely in that place where you wrote down sales, right? Sales.
Yeah.
1 hour a day, every morning, no matter what, from 5:30 to 6:30, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Now it's about saying for the next 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, no matter what.
Yeah.
That magic hour, you get your tail out of bed, you get your done with your workout, whatever it is, you sit down and that timer goes off from 5:30 to 6:30. It's on do not disturb. And you start sending out notes. Hey, are you going to, can I follow, want to follow up on this? And one thing will lead to another. And you'll see a flywheel almost immediately of people reaching back out. You're like, why didn't I do this sooner? Right. And sick, you're telling me in 1 month, 1 hour a day, mm-hmm. 20 hours of just new business sales, you'll close all kinds of business. And now mm-hmm. if you imagine that, you up that to an hour and a half or 2 hours every day. You'll right. close new business and you'll have right. more contacts and more leads than you know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be there. You know what to do and how to do it. Now the key is setting up the systems, setting up the accountability,
right?
The daily non-negotiables. I mean, I'll give you one free coaching thing right now is from this, decide one thing you're going to do, announce it on a story and then freaking do it. And then check in, post it as a story. This is done. Wes Watson talks about that. And that was a great thing. He's okay. If you're non-negotiables with yourself or get up every morning at 3, here's what I want you to do, Emperingham. I want you to screen grab 3 a.m. every fucking morning, 5 days a week. And you post that as a story. Then you're going to post, drink coffee, drink water in the morning. Yeah, drink 16 ounces. That's the next post. 16 ounces of water you're drinking. Do you work out after that? Yeah, I work out after that. They're going to do that. You track it on Habit Tracker every morning. That's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to do 5 days a week. And I'm doing it.
Oh, he's one of your mentors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I bought his program, and that's one of the things he was talking about. He's like, what are your daily habits that are right for you? And he's like, commit and be accountable. Accountability is everything. And so right. I'll pass that gem on to you. You know what to do. You know how to do it. You know when to do it.
Yep.
Now the only missing ingredient is accountability. And if you promise the world that you are going to do that every morning from 5:30 to 6:30, rain or shine, and you're going to post about it, and you said that out loud and you manifested that, well, then just to be consistent with your word, you might miss one, but you ain't yeah. going to just blow it off. Especially if you go for the next 20 days, that's what I'm going to do. The next 30 days, every day in the month of June, starting June 15th, that's what I'm going to do every morning. And I'm going to post a picture of me sitting down and doing my new business from 5:30 to 6:30. Even if you fuck that up and only yeah. do it 4 times a week, you'll still be way better off than if you did nothing.
Yeah, I want to do it 7 times a week, though.
There you go.
I really, because you get to a point where you're just like, oh, man, something has to give. Something
yeah, I got you.
And as you said, you be in a hiatus, and then you just come crashing down. And
yeah.
then you feel it again. And it's just, man, can I just be consistent?
I know
what I mean. And I had a point in my life where I was just like, I would tell myself, can you be consistent with any fucking thing?
Yeah, you can right. and you will.
Right, right,
you can.
Right.
You do it with working out.
Yeah.
You do it with one thing, you do it with another thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, man, this has been like such a great conversation, man. I don't want to take up like all of your time, but yeah, this has been an amazing story of resilience, dedication, accountability, perseverance, and I'm sure like it'll touch a lot of people because like so. I often talk to so many people, even with myself, and I'll be like, yeah, so what happened with this? Oh, I gave it up. Oh, I gave it up. Oh, I didn't want. Oh, is this? Oh, is that? And I'm just like, damn, like, You could have been a millionaire by now if you kept going. But I feel like the microwave your way to success and all things are gonna be easy or all this and that. And when you like, I tell people you have to be delusional. You have to psych yourself out. You know what I'm saying? You have to have a whole different type of mind to be some of these things that you're choosing to be. You have to be almost crazy. And I wanted to tell my friend. Matter of fact, I'll just ask you, right? So looking in the future, right? If you were to say, okay, I, Scott, am going to achieve this, and it could be delusional to other people, like, what, Scott, you must be crazy. What is something that you will say that you're going to achieve that people will look at you and be like, you must have lost your fucking mind?
In 3 years, I want to buy another house in Emerald Bay, Laguna Beach, California. Emerald Bay goes for, I think, starting out at $10 million. And to me, I grew up in Emerald Bay when I was just a kid. Mm-hmm. And I told my wife probably about a week ago. She was asleep. In fact, I've been grabbing images of pictures on Emerald Bay, Laguna Beach, California, and posting on my Pinterest board. It's an internal Pinterest board, but it's part of my morning routine. Mm-hmm. 10, 10, 10. Read, journal, meditate. And when I'm reading, journaling, meditate, what I'll do is I'll also do a goal statement. I do an affirmation statement. I read it every morning. And I'll visualize before I meditate of manifesting who I want to be, where I want to live, what I want to be doing. And that was something I always dreamt about for years. And then I let it go. When I was on track to do that, I thought, years ago, when I lost everything, I let that one go. And just about a week and a half ago, it popped into my head. And I was like, wouldn't that be cool? Just a few years ago, I'm bust. And now I'm at the pinnacle of this private gate guarded community where I could take my wife for a walk on the sand, right on the beach, and hear the waves crashing at night like I did when I was a kid, and grow up in this amazing community, and just know that I created that. Me and my wife created that. My family, I created this for my family. And I went and I told her, I woke her up and I gave her a kiss. I said, we're going to be moving to Emerald Bay, Laguna Beach in 3 years. And she looked at me like I was fucking nuts. It's just, there's something I didn't know about that happened. I said, no, I'm just telling you. And my daughter laughed and she goes, I'm going to be a senior in high school. I'll barely be able to enjoy it. I said, well, you'll be able to enjoy it when you come home from college or whatever you're going to do afterwards. Right. But in 3 years, that's where I want to be. And that's where my head is at. I'm saying it out loud. So I'm doing everything I possibly can. And for me, it comes back to the daily habits. It works, you can't stand in front of the fireplace and say, give me warmth. You got to give it. You got to put the wood in. You got to make it work. So as I execute on my daily habits, as I build my teams, as I execute day in and day out, as I honor certain covenants I've made and promises I've made, I believe I'll be blessed. And I can't wait to take that walk with my wife in the morning on a Saturday or a Sunday, just up and down that beach, feel the water sweep up over our feet and say, we did it. We did it. And that'll be a wonderful day.
And you grew up out there where homes were like 300,000.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was crazy.
Like, you're down, like, I'll pay for this house. It was $250,000.
Yeah.
I worked out. I was an insurance agent, and now you got to be something outrageous.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's going to take something.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. I got to check out what Emerald Bay is, man.
It's nice. It's nice.
I bet it is.
It's nice.
I bet it is, man. Laguna Beach, because I live in Calabasas now, and I'm like in the middle of Hidden Hills and this other gated community. And say I look to the right and I see the gated community where I want to live in. But then I'm just like, and I often say, oh my God, I can't wait to pull up with the U-Haul truck.
Yeah.
And just pull in and this is at the third. And then I started looking at open houses and man, I want to start going to open houses. And I went to one open house and it was a home that was like $11 million.
Yeah.
And I went with my whole family and the real estate agent was on me.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I don't have anything near close to $10 million. But I'm just like, it must be something about me that has this man believing that I can pay for this house.
Yeah.
So something is fucking missing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about the agent called me the next day. Then I went another time and I seen Kevin Hart in, looking at the house too.
Nice.
And the agent is talking to me, talking to Kevin Hart. And I'm just like, oh, no, man, I have to get something together. Like, this isn't adding up. You know what I mean? Because for some reason, this person is around people that could afford these type of homes. He thinks that you can afford the home. And you already know, like, being in sales and being around people, you can kind of tell people's energy and, nah, this ain't the guy, or I kind of know he's kind of bullshit. But it was like everything about me made them believe that I could buy the home. And I was like, okay, nah, I gotta match this shit up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was crazy, man. Crazy seeing my kids running on the lawn, playing, having a great time. I was like, fuck.
Yeah. Well, this is a final thought, man. And this connects. I've been waiting to try to pull this together. In 3 minutes, I got to be on a call, but I want to share something with you. David Coggins calls it the cookie jar. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this? The cookie jar?
Yeah, put in the positive things.
Yeah. Well, he talks about pulling out a memory in the toughest times. What's going to get him to go that extra mile? What's going to get him to get out of bed? Whatever that thing is, that impossible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do it on the negative or do it on the positive. I'll share the negative. When I was at my worst, and I can't believe I'm going to share this out loud, but this is exactly what I would do. I read that, and he said, I would pull a memory out or a thought out that would trigger the fighter instinct in me to do whatever it took. Mm-hmm. And there was times when I'd only got 3 hours of sleep, and I was trying to rebuild my business. I was just feeling beat up by the lawyers and all the shit swirling around. I get 3 hours of sleep, and also my alarm would go off at 3 o'clock or 3:30. It'd be time to get up and do my shit where there was no promise of a payoff. The cookie jar for me was on the negative. I would hear my alarm and I'd think, I'm going to go back to sleep. And then the first thing I do is pull out of the cookie jar. Well, I bet your ex-wife's husband is going to love raising your kids. Because you're too much of a fucking bitch to get out of bed at 3.
Oh,
I got out of bed at 3.
Hell yeah. Now I know how to do the cookie jar.
That's
a
fucking cookie jar.
You gotta boom.
I would literally think that. And dude, that never failed. I don't know whether there's probably psychology to go, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
But guess what? It got me out of bed at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think about that and say, well, maybe that's best. Maybe he'll do a better job taking care of your kids because you're too much of a fucking bitch to get out of bed at 3. Oh, you only got 3. And I'm out. And I'd be like, motherfucker, nobody fuck. I mean, I would just be an animal, throw some water in my face and do whatever it took. Now I do the positives and I try to do both. Like, how good is it going to feel? And sometimes I do the negatives and sometimes I do the positive. But for you, that could be that cookie jar when you don't want to get up at 3 and say, ah, my kids don't need to run out that lawn. I'll explain why dad couldn't get out of bed and they couldn't have that. I'll explain that to when they're old. They'll understand that dad needed an extra 30 minutes of sleep. Dad, you do that?
Nah, that'll fuck me up. Like, when you put your kids in it, that's when it's a whole.
Dude, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Play with that cookie jar thing and you'll be getting up and you'll be doing those hour sales.
Right. I need to do that before I go to sleep. Let me see. Okay, cool. I'm going to wake up.
Yeah, man.
Scott, bro, I know you got a call. It's 1:30, but thank you so much, man. Let's connect again. And I really appreciate your time and the wisdom that you gave us today.
Likewise. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, man. Bye. Have a good day.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.